recording, so now connected.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. I'm going to go ahead and do an intro real quick. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everyone. Welcome to the reconvened IGO-INGO-PDP Working Group on the Red Cross Names call on the 17th of August, 2017. On the call today, we have Alan Greenberg, Chuck Gomes, David Maher, Jennifer Breckenridge, Mason Cole, Thomas Rickert, Heather Forrest, and George Concio. From staff, I have Marika Connings, Mary Wong, Barry Cobb, Steve Chan, and myself, Julie Bislam. Do we have anyone on audio only? I believe Stefan Hankin is on audio only, but noise was coming from the line. All right, well, I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid background noise. With this, I'll turn it over to Thomas Rickert. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Julie. And in fact, it took me a couple of years to get the introduction right, and now that I learned it finally, this is done by you, which is an excellent service. Thanks so much, and hello, everyone. First of all, I should apologize for having been silent on the mailing list, but actually I was on vacation and really offline. So I would like to welcome all of you to this second call of the reconvened IGO-INGO-PDP Working Group. And as you will have seen, we have received the background material that we discussed earlier, and there was also some debate on the list, which shows that at least some of you have really read the documentation, so that hopefully today we can have a good discussion on those. Do we have any updates to statements of interest? Chuck, I see your hand raised. Please, over to you.
Thanks, Thomas. Chuck Gomes, and I don't remember whether I did this in our last meeting or not, but I have updated my statement of interest. I think most of you know I'm no longer a VeriSign employee, so that's on my SOI, and I'll just leave it at that. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Chuck. I don't see any other hands raised. Are there any comments on the agenda? I don't see any hands raised as well on this, so we can now move to the to agenda item number one, and that is the review of the RCRC submission on the legal basis for protection of identifiers, and there was a link to the email in which this documentation was shared, and let me go on record thanking the IGO, the Red Cross, and in particular Charlotte for putting together the information, sending into the list, and also to Stefan for responding to Chuck's request and providing additional information on that document. The way this call is structured, you know, when we last spoke, we agreed that we would ask for the legal basis for the protection of the identifiers that are now seek to be protected permanently, and that we would raise concerns should there be any with respect to that legal basis on the mailing list, allowing for everyone to really digest the information at hand and then have a discussion during this call. So what we're going to do today is we're going to open it up for comments and questions on the information provided by the RCRC. We will then go through the briefing paper from the Copenhagen facilitated discussion, which also offers a lot of background information. And then we're going to look at what the GAC said. And as you know, GAC advice is particularly important when it comes to public policy issues. And these three sources of information in combination will hopefully allow for this group to determine whether or not the protections can be granted or whether external help is required in order to respond to that question, or as a third alternative, whether permanent protection for the identifiers can't be granted based on the information that we have. I should also use the opportunity to hopefully once and for all clarify a point that's been discussed on the list as well, and that is the question of acronyms. And as stated by the Red Cross itself, as well as by others on the mailing list, this is out of scope for the discussion in this group, right? So we do not have to discuss acronyms. And responding to Ken's question in the chat, he's asking who is speaking. This is Thomas Ricard speaking. I'm making some opening remarks before we open it up for questions. So and we're now at the point where I would like to invite all of you to make initial comments on the submission made by the Red Cross, Red Crescent representatives to this group. So if you want to speak to that, if you have questions, please do raise your hand and you will be given the floor. Okay, maybe you need to warm up to it a little bit. I hope that I don't put Jennifer too much on the spot, but I guess that we should maybe put on the record or into the transcript for this call, you know, some of the things that have been discussed earlier, and that is how exactly you derive protection for domain names and strings from the laws and conventions that you mentioned in your paper, because that primarily speaks to emblems. It also speaks to designations, but maybe you could, if that's okay for you, say a few sentences about the link to domain names and the strings in question for these protections.
Good afternoon, it's Jennifer here. I just should probably give Stefan the opportunity to comment if he is there, given that he was involved in the drafting and has been, you know, the ICRC has led on this. So, Stefan, if you're there and you want to do this section, otherwise I can say a few words.
Just for information, we do not see... Stefan is there. Stefan, welcome.
Yes, good afternoon. I'm afraid I didn't quite catch the question because I don't hear very well. But what was the question, please? Quickly, in short.
Sure. Stefan, the question was whether you could to put it into the record, briefly explain the connection between the Geneva Conventions as well as potentially other national laws, the protections that are granted there, and the strings that you are seeking to be permanently protected as domain names.
Okay. So, Jennifer, I will start and maybe you can you complement it. Well, indeed, I think we have had the opportunity to hear us explain this many times before, but essentially, indeed, the protections of the names, Red Cross, Red Crescent, Red Crystal, and Red Lion and Sun, which are also protected designations, stem from the 1949 Geneva Conventions, that is, international treaties that are today universally ratified. that is by 196 states, which makes them, I believe, the most ratified international instrument in the world, or on equal numbers with the International Convention on the Rights of the Child. The first Geneva Convention, adopted in 1949, essentially provides for absolute protections for both the emblems of the Red Cross and Red Crescent and Red Lion and Sun, and for their names, for their designations. Those protections are essentially linked to the purpose of the four Geneva Conventions adopted in 1949, which are the protection of victims of war, victims of armed conflict in times of armed conflict. And basically the drafters, that is the international community at the time, had decided or confirmed that the Red Cross and Red Crescent emblems were the emblems of protection of victims of armed conflict. And they also protected the designations, the names, Red Cross and Red Crescent. Those protections for the names were essentially, as for the emblems, essentially intended to ensure respect for emblems which were intended to be protective in times of war. And those protections were defined to apply both in times of war, so only certain categories of persons were authorized to use them, in particular armed forces medical services, but also in times of peace, meaning that in the assumption of the drafters and of the treaties in force today are that any misuse of the emblems or misuse of the names, including in peacetime or by unauthorized persons, is of a nature to undermine the protective purposes I mentioned. So that is the ground purpose, and in the recognized interpretation of these treaties, it means that the words Red Cross, Red Crescent, Red Lion and Sun, and later Red Crystal are words that are protected in any configuration and in association with any other words, meaning that unauthorized users, for example, the private sector is not enabled in principle to use the emblem or the names Red Cross. Unauthorized users must therefore refrain from doing so. And the conventions in question also create an obligation for states parties, again, the 196 states parties, the Geneva Conventions today, to themselves protect and ensure respect for the emblems and for the designations for the words Red Cross, Red Crescent, Red Lion and Sun, and Red Crystal in their domestic legislation. And that has a number of implications. That is that states, for example, ensure that the emblems as well as the names are protected from registration of trademarks and so on and so forth. So in the documents that we submitted, there are a number of annexes, as you will have seen. These include the relevant provisions from the first Geneva Convention of 1949, the relevant provision from the third additional protocol to the Geneva Conventions, which is a much later treaty, but which protects the Red Crystal emblem and the Red Crystal words or names. And as you will have also noted, we also attached a list of the national legislation in force in multiple jurisdictions in over 125 states. There are today there's today legislation which protects these names and these words from misuse, including again from the private sector. Or the corporate sector. So I don't know whether this answers the question. Can you confirm, or what other elements do you think would be necessary to provide here, Thomas?
First of all, thanks very much, Stefan, for providing that information. In fact, I do have another question for you, but I read in the chat that Ken was already also raised his hand, has a question for you, so I let Ken go first. Ken, the floor is yours.
Yes. Can you hear me, Thomas?
I can hear you loud and clearly.
Yeah.
Okay. I apologize if I sound impatient or somewhat frustrated here, but to the best of my knowledge, we've been kicking this around for somewhere between 3.5 and 5 years now. And I would like very much to have somebody in a very short, concise manner tell us exactly where the issues are right now. I don't need the history of the Red Cross. I don't need the and exactly what are we trying to accomplish by reconstructing this thing? Because I frankly think it's not a waste of time, but it's using a lot of resources to solve a problem that could probably be solved relatively quickly if the community had a clear and concise question posed that needed to be answered with a yes or a no. Should the Red Cross and the related, I will call them symbols and words and so forth, be protected in the DNF, yes or no? I mean, you can only go so far with an issue like this to the point where it becomes almost distractive. It's just something that's sitting on the side, and I'd much rather get this problem resolved and off. And I don't see any reason why we have to go 3, 4, 5 months. It's almost like we're relearning the entire issue, and yet I look at the people who are signed into the participants list, and by golly, I have a real problem saying that these people don't have a complete and concise history with ICANN and with these issues. So please, somebody tell me, where the hell are we trying to go here, and what are the problems that need to be solved? And that's what I'm trying to get to. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Ken. And I think you will find nobody disagreeing with your wish to get this off the table as quickly as possible. I will try to very concisely respond to your comment. And should that not be satisfactory, I suggest that we take this offline for the sake of saving everyone's time. But when the original PDP working group did its work, it did not grant permanent protection for certain strings for national societies of the Red Cross, Red Crescent movement. And these organizations were not happy with the original policy recommendations, nor with the GAC. And since there was conflicting GAC advice from GAC advice and policy recommendations from the GNSO, the board was between a rock and a hard place, and therefore we've been asked by the GNSO Council to look at a very specific issue in terms of potentially changing original policy recommendations. But we can't just do this without applying the required diligence and looking at the legal basis for granting protection for strings that have been explicitly spelled out in GAC advice after the original PDP working group had concluded its work. And I do agree that a lot of what we're hearing seems like a deja vu for a lot of people, but I think that we should go through the supporting documentation as quickly but diligently as we can, and then hopefully conclude the work in far less time than the months that you mentioned. So my hope is that we can resolve this in the next couple of weeks, hopefully. But certainly that is not to prejudice whether or not we're going to have difficult discussions on this. Let me go to Heather and then back to Ken, who raised his hand again. Heather, please.
Thank you, Thomas. My question is this, picking up on the comment just made previously by Ken. This legal basis, of course, it is not new, as Stefan has noted. The Geneva Conventions have been in force for some time, and certainly these would have been within the scope of the original PDP's view. I'm not aware of any changes to those international legal provisions since then. So to the extent that the group didn't find a legal basis then, I'm wondering how we find one now. Thomas, you and others who were on that original PDP, to the extent that something has changed and I'm misunderstanding, I think it would be very helpful to clarify that now. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Heather. And I guess this really boils down to the overall volume of designations that shall be protected. It is true that the legal basis, apart from, you know, the national societies' names that have subsequently been covered by national laws, that the legal basis has not changed. But the original PDP working group has looked at a huge spectrum of strength, not only for the Red Cross, Red Crescent movement, but also for IGOs and even INGOs. We've been looking at top-level protections, second-level protections, exact match names, variations thereof, and acronyms. And the request to protect national societies' names permanently was explicitly mentioned by the GAC after we had concluded our work. So this working group had concluded or almost concluded its work when the RC mentioned those designations, and then they have been granted temporary protection at the time. So I'm not sure whether this fully answers your question, but I think that it was the sequence of events at the time that made the original PDP working group not grant permanent protection for these designations. And this is something that we are reviewing, again, and hopefully in a very swift manner. Ken, please.
Yeah, so it sounds to me that there's almost an allusion here to the camel's nose under the tent. Are we really saying that there is so much concern about granting these restrictions or exemptions from TLDs to these strings that we establish a precedent that can then be used in the future by various IGOs or INGOs for them to use? And what I'm saying basically is, as far as I can tell, we have one item we have one issue on the table. Our issue is not necessarily, unless I read the information, our issue is not whether or not we're allowing all of the identifiers for these various intergovernmental organizations and so forth to enjoy the same status as the Red Cross and their various entities. Am I right or am I wrong, Thomas?
Well, I'm not sure. I guess that, you know, first of all, we've been tasked by the GNSO Council to take a look at this. That's what we're doing right now. Certainly, each and every additional request that's coming in by whoever asks for protections needs to be looked at on an individual basis. And I guess that we need to apply the required diligence when making recommendations on this in order to avoid that floodgates could be opened, which I think would be the case if we just said yes or or no and not really explore the legal basis for that or other public policy or other reasons for granting protections. But I guess it's not for me to decide. I'm trying to navigate this group through this process. And I would suggest, yeah. Ken, is this a follow-up question or is that an old hand?
Yeah, it's a follow-up. The follow-up question basically is, are we working on an ulterior motive here? Is the purpose of this group to provide a set of guidelines that allows requests like of a similar nature to this to be dealt with in the future? And are we just using the Red Cross as the straw man for the establishment of this set of guidelines? That's where I'm confused, you know. I've got 30 pages of information on the Red Cross, and yet it sounds to me like it's a much deeper issue than the Red Cross. And so let's call a spade a spade.
I am not aware of any strategy or rationale for this exercise to be a role model for future requests such as this. You are certainly right that this sort of is a precedent because this clause that allows for reviewing GNSO policy recommendations has never been invoked in the past, right? So we are moving on uncharted territory at the moment. At the same time, I do think we need to work on this request as we would need to work on every other request. The only difference is that this is a post-PDP recommendation phase, while other requests from third parties for seeking protection would need to go through the whole life cycle of PDP work. So I don't think that this particular piece of work can set precedent for other third-party requests. There has been some exchange in the chat, it's interesting because the question that has been mentioned there about national society names was exactly the question that I wanted to ask Stefan as a follow-up to his earlier intervention. And I'm sort of glad that others also spotted that. And therefore, let me pass on this question to Stefan. Stefan, you've spoken about the emblems and designations mentioned in the Geneva Conventions as well as national laws. But what I think we would need to understand better is how this relates to national society names and the name of the Red Cross itself. So I would suggest that we move to you now, and then we go back to Greg to make his intervention.
Yes, thank you. So Stefan Henkin speaking, ICRC. Well, first of all, if I may, Thomas, I would just like to make one comment to the conversation that has just taken place. I think we do need to come back to the reasons why the working group was reconvened, and that is because there was a recognition at the level of the board that there was a need to find to reconcile the Jack's consistent advice and the GNSO recommendations of three or four years ago, and I think we do need to concentrate on the particular issue that at stake, which is reconciling the GAC advice and the past GNSO recommendations on the Red Cross with present names and designations, and more particularly, as Thomas, you mentioned, the question of the names of the respective components of the Red Cross and Red Crescent movement. So the names of the National Societies of the Red Cross, Red Crescent, but we do need to add to that also the names, the designations of the international bodies in the movement. And so I know this has been discussed and presented many a times before, so I think we, you know, the issue is to try to find a way of reconciling the GAC advice and JNSO recommendations. And one more point on that is, certainly, I believe the GAC has grounded its advice very clearly on public international law and the global public interests at stake under those particular treaty provisions that I have mentioned. So I think this is what the group should be looking at. Now to the issue of the names of the respective components of the Red Cross, Red Crescent movement, the Red Cross, Red Crescent organizations, the national societies of the Red Cross and Red Crescent in particular. It is a fact that the Geneva Conventions mention the protection of the designations of the words Red Cross, Red Crescent, Red Crystal. But as I have mentioned, those words are protected in whatever configuration, whether they are on their own or whether they're associated with other words and so on and so forth. And the second point that is important to underline here is there are two respective uses of the designations. There is, of the emblems and the designations, there is so-called protective use, so that is the use in particular by armed forces medical services in times of armed conflict, as I mentioned. But there is also a second use, which is recognized under international law, which is indicative use, and that is the use of the emblems, but also of the words Red Cross, Red Crescent, Red Crystal, by the components of the International Red Cross, Red Crescent movement. So I'm afraid that a lot of you have heard us explain this before, but basically the organizations within the Red Cross, Red Crescent movement are themselves enabled, entitled to use the designations. And that usage by regulation is normally to be composed, or in principle to be composed, by either the words Red Cross, Red Crescent, or Red Crystal, associated with an adjective indicating national affiliation of the organization. I'm talking here of the national societies. So they are protected whether they are on their own, Red Cross, for example, but they're also protected when they are associated with an adjective indicating national affiliation, such as Croix-Rouge Française, British Red Cross, and so on and so forth. So you have an intent from the drafters, based on the public policy considerations I indicated when these conventions were drafted, to authorize the national organizations of the Red Cross, Red Crescent to use the words, but also by implication that those names would be protected, or at least the designations accompanied by the adjective indicating national affiliation or the names of the organizations. So I'll leave it there, Thomas. I don't know whether this answers your question.
Thanks very much, Stefan. I suggest that we move to Greg and Alan. And just since there has been some communication going on in the chat, the information about the facilitated dialogue and the RC position as asked for by Jorge, that has been sent to the mailing list. Jorge, maybe you can double check, or we can ask staff to explain exactly when this was sent, but I guess that the information that you're asking for has been circulated. Greg, you're next.
Thanks. Greg Shatton, for the record. So I think we've heard what I would call conclusions rather than analysis, and what we need to look at as a group is the specific legal basis for their request, and get into kind of the chapter and verse of the conventions and other things that were cited to in passing. Look at the language itself. It's unfortunate Stefan could not join the meeting fully by joining the Adobe Connect room. I'll note Mary Wong remark that the Geneva Conventions and protocols do not specifically mention the National Society names or what specific names associated with Red Cross are intended by use of the terms, emblem, and designations therein. However, hence staff felt it was for the working group with the assistance of the RC reps to clarify what exactly is the scope of the law, as especially in the DNS. Heather Forrest has remarked similarly, it's not clear to me how the National Society names fit here in the Geneva Convention. So I realize there's a great deal of desire on the part of Red Cross to make that connection, but we have to go beyond desire to legal basis, which brings me to the second part of my remarks and a response to Ken, which is maybe a little bit different than Thomas's on his last question. I don't know that there is any sort of an attempt to create a precedent here, but there is the possibility of it nonetheless. What's important here is to make sure that there is a firm and explicit legal basis for any additional protections that are granted by this and then thus recommended as policy by this working group. So we really need to get to the bottom of the legal basis for this. It may be slightly more detailed than anybody really wants, but without that detail, we're asked to either make leaps of logic or faith. I think there aren't that many steps involved needed to avoid a leap. I think we need to take those steps, or else we do create a precedent, wittingly or unwittingly, for the granting of protections without explicit legal bases for them, but merely on the basis of desire. We need to avoid creating that sort of precedent, because everyone has an ox eventually that is being gored here, but not all oxes are created equally. So we need to make sure that we look at those at this issue now. Unfortunately, this group is freighted with responsibility, I believe, beyond the immediate question in front of it. It's become kind of a canary in a coal mine for a number of issues over the last 3 or 4 years, which is why we haven't been able to accomplish much, among other reasons, on this particular topic. So I think we need to get down to brass tacks, and rather than looking at a 44-page document in our Adobe chat, we look at the language in particular. I see that Thomas has, while I've been talking, clip something and put it in the chat, which I'll look at as soon as I stop talking, which will be right now. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Greg. Alan.
Thank you very much. I'm going to disagree with Greg, and I'm going to express at least as much frustration as Ken did, although perhaps for somewhat different reasons. I was an active participant in the first group. I'm attending this meeting, although it happens to be in direct conflict with a CCWG meeting that's going on right now that I'm an active participant in. This is not a threat, but simply a statement. I've got my fingers in a lot of things, and there's only so many of these meetings I'm going to attend when we're saying the same thing over and over and over again. I do not believe we are going to find a legal basis the Red Cross is protected in all sorts of ways in all sorts of places, but none of them talk about domain names. I think we have a strong case has been made time and time again that there is no other organization comparable to the Red Cross that is protected in a similar way by both treaty and national law. I think we have a strong basis for simply making a decision, if this group can, to protect the national names and we can all go home. I think we should at some point decide it. The concept that we can only make decisions in a PDP based on legal basis, I think, is completely ridiculous. PDPs on a regular basis come to agreement on things that have nothing to do with being required by law. We just decide that is the right thing to do. I don't think we have to worry about a precedent. So I believe we need to simply come to a decision on this and get on with our lives. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Ellen, before we move to Chuck, I'd just like to briefly respond that in my view, as sort of the shepherd of this group following procedures, you are right that this group can just come up with a recommendation or with a yes-no answer at its discretion. But the question is, will that stand when it comes in front of the GNSO Council, which surely will, and that's the role of the GNSO Council, as I understand it. The GNSO Council will not replace its own views with the group, the PDP working group's views, but it has a duty to check whether due process has been followed. And as much as I agree with everyone who is frustrated over the process, that it takes so long, that there is repetition in there, I think we need to go on the record in transcripts as well as in our report that we have looked at the various aspects, why not protections can be granted or can't be granted. And when Stefan said that it is the friction between GAC advice and GNSO policy recommendations have to be reconciled in this group, I think that is, at least in my view, not an accurate statement. It is not for this group to take a shortcut to reconciling friction, which, in my view, has not been caused by the PDP working group. But we have to do the right thing, and we have to be satisfied that the recommendations that we make stand the test of being looked at by the international community, and that requires some diligence, and then it is for others to decide whether this reconciles the views of the GAC, the board, and the GNSO. We have to just concentrate on our part, and I apologize for potentially having caused some of the repetition because I want to make sure that we have all the information that is belonging to responding to this question on the record for this group's work. That may frustrate some, but I think it is part of doing a proper job. Chuck, you're next.
Thanks, Thomas. First of all, I think it would be great if we can do what you just said and concentrate on what our tasks are. But we're making this so complicated. When we look at our tasks, they're always in a huge amount of verbiage that is repeated over and over again, as Alan said. It's frustrating how many times I have heard the same things over and over again. Of course, I heard it in the first working group, but it's happening now, too. We're overcomplicating this thing. Now, that doesn't mean that decisions are necessarily easy. But let me make some suggestions instead of just criticizing. First of all, I think we should have a one-paragraph description of what the questions we have before us to answer. For example, what names are we going to protect permanently? Are we going to add the national names? Are we going to add the two international names? that may not be all of our tasks, but our tasks are always encompassed, at least in the working group so far, in a huge amount of verbiage. So I don't think everyone has a clear picture of the questions we need to answer. So my first suggestion is, let's have a list of the questions that we are tasked as a working group to answer. One paragraph is fine. We don't need all the context of that. That's important, but we've heard it over and over again. Secondly, I think James Bladel, in a message August 8th, gave us a very clear path forward, and it was related to the GNSO Council resolution. And he paraphrased it into three things that we need to check for each of the questions that we need to answer. So first step is let's identify very concisely what the questions are we have to answer. Secondly, for each of those questions, James gave us an outline of what we need to evaluate. The first one is that the protections were based upon and reflected in national and international law. The second one was that the list of covered strings was finite and was amended only via consistent and visible processes. And third, there were no other legitimate uses for the string. We should answer each of those questions or each of those items for each of the questions that we're tasked with answering. Now, with regard to protections based on national and international law, I agree with Alan that we can go make recommendations that aren't based in law. I think we should do that with caution because it sets precedents for other work in the future. So I think we should do that very carefully. But we should first see, are there really any is there really any basis in law? Because in the new GTLD program, that's one of the principles that was very critical in that, is that any recommendations that we make were based on preferably international law because of the global nature of the Internet. So if we make exceptions to that, we better provide good, strong justification. And I'm not saying that's not possible. I may be one that supports that. But we've got to simplify and make very clear to the whole working group what our tasks are. If we evaluate the three items that James identified for each of those questions, and if we decide to make an exception, justify that, we can move forward. But let's quit all of the repetition of stuff that has been around for years and the documents that we've seen over and over again, and let's get down to the specific questions we have to answer and try to come to consensus on the answers that we can agree on. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Chuck. With respect to the two points that you mentioned, first, quick summary of what the task is. Don't you think that the GNSO Council resolution is clear and short enough for this? Because it explicitly states what we're supposed to do.
Was that a question for me, Thomas?
Exactly. I'm just trying to understand whether potentially the GNSO Council resolution is the paragraph that you might be looking for or whether we need to write up something.
Well, I thought James wrote it up for us.
Yes, but I guess that's that is he was relating to the GNSO Council resolution. So I guess that we have that paragraph already. And then I think you are right in citing James's email who's testing things. And if you remember his email, and I don't have it in front of me now, but from memory, the first point that he was looking at when responding to the three question is whether there was sufficient legal grounds for granting protections. And that is exactly the step that we're in at the moment. So I take to heart the concerns that have been raised by you, Ellen, and others that we should, where we can, avoid repetition. But reviewing the legal basis is actually part of what James has mentioned, and that is actually part of what we're tasked with. So I think that what James mentioned there is exactly the methodology that we're applying. But we will try to do it quicker and more straightforward. Let's now move to Jorge, please. Jorge, if you're speaking, you might be talking to a muted microphone. So, Jorge, maybe you can put your comment into the chat or try to resolve the audio issue so that we can then hear you. Okay, I at the risk of upsetting you even more, let me ask whether there are more questions with respect to the explanations that Stefan gave linking the National Society's names, actually the designations that we're discussing now, and the Geneva Convention. And maybe Jennifer and Jorge, yes, please?
Thomas, can I just, I appreciate the previous comments on the three questions that, you know, need to be looked at. I think, you know, the legal basis, the finite list of names, you know, other legitimate users, so the strings, I think, is a good way to go. On the legal issue, I just want to read for the record one of the articles of the Geneva Convention. It won't be long. It's the first paragraph only. It's Article 53. So you have it as Annex 4 of the document that we send. The Article 53 reads as follows. The use by individuals, societies, firms, or companies, either public or private, other than those entitled thereto under the present convention, essentially, as I mentioned, Armed Forces Medical Services and the components of the Red Cross Movement. So the use by individual societies, firms, or companies, either public or private, other than those entitled thereto under the present convention, of the emblem or the designation Red Cross or Geneva Cross or any sign or designation constituting an imitation thereof, whatever the object of such use, and irrespective of the date of its adoption, shall be prohibited at all times. So I think, you know, for me, however legalistic this may sound, it's actually very clear. So I just want to put it on record. This is an article that to me is very clear in saying that unauthorized users are not entitled to use it for any purpose. And, of course, these conventions were drafted in 1949, so, yes, there is no mention, of course, of the DMA, but it's still the case that, you know, this is the founding article, if you will, of what we're speaking about. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Stefan.
Yes.
We now have Jennifer and Jorge waiting in the queue, so Jennifer first.
Yes, thanks very much. I just thought it was time for me to say something. I am the new kid on the block from the Red Cross, Red Crescent movement, but I just wanted to respond to some of the earlier comments, and thanks, Stefan, for that last point. I was just going to, you know, following on from what he say, from what he said, reiterate that the Geneva Conventions provide that certain limited, very limited classes of persons can use the Red Cross, Red Crescent emblem and the words as Stefan has said, by themselves or in conjunction with other words like the names of national societies. So in terms of a legal right, that is a legal right to use those terms by the Red Cross, Red Crescent entities to indicate their association with the International Red Cross, Red Crescent movement, and also under the protective use by medical services of the armed forces. They have a legal right under international law to use the emblems and the name. Similarly, as this clause states, others under international law are prohibited from using them. So therefore, granting permanent protection protects the legal right under international law and helps to enforce international law by prohibiting the use by others. Similarly, there's a legal right, and of course there's also a very strong public policy argument which has been made before, and that is that, you know, the way the International Red Cross and Red Crescent operates in times of crisis, we launch appeals via internet, and there has been a high vulnerability to fraud and to misuse and to imitations of Red Cross, Red Crescent entities in order to defraud the movement. So in terms of public policy, that's another very strong reason to grant permanent protection. In terms of the argument that this sets a precedent for other international organisations, I'd quite strongly refute that. Although the public policy issue that I mentioned at the end there is the same for other international organisations who fundraise and do other things online, the protection under the Geneva Convention is unique to the Red Cross, Red Crescent movement, and that's why we have always, as I understand it, sought to be treated differently from other international organisations. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much. Next is Jorge.
Good afternoon. Do you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you all right.
Thank you very much for giving me the floor. I'll be very brief, and I just wanted to support what Alan Greenberg mentioned before, and of course what the colleagues from the Red Cross have been explaining. I think that Stefan and also Jennifer have made my argument. I just wanted to recall that, of course, there's on one side the international law, legal basis, as well as the national laws protecting the names of the national societies. And on the other side, we made sure, and it was a key part of the consensus we arrived at in Copenhagen, that the public policy considerations that the GAC has been putting forward for some time, which have been mentioned by Jennifer as preventing fraud, embezzlement, people spending for Red Cross societies when they have no legitimate use of that those denominations just to defraud people who are willing to contribute to humanitarian causes, that all these public policy considerations should be considered. And this was taken up by the board in the resolution requesting the GNSO to review this matter and referring back to GAC advice. So I think that we have a perfect combination of international, national law and public policy considerations to a very limited scope of names, and that we should recognize that this is a good basis for making this change. And obviously, if we go back to conventions that have some some decades of age and try to find the perfect legal basis, we will be able to discuss and to put into question the legitimacy of this protection. But I think that is not really the purpose of this exercise. Both the facilitated discussions in Copenhagen and the board resolution made it clear that we were looking to both factors, to the public policy factors, and we think that we should put this question at rest, confirming the provisional protection. So I just wanted to make that comment. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Jorge. And while you were speaking, there was some more communication going on in the chat relating to, you know, structuring our dialogue more and looking at charter questions. And I'm afraid that I'm sort of getting lost with these comments. The email that Chuck was referring to earlier, where he applauded James for his email sent on August the 8th, the first point that James is mentioning in this email is that we need to answer the question that the protections were based on reflected in national and international law. So that's the first point that needs to be discussed. And in my view, that is exactly what we're doing right now, i.e. trying to understand where, if at all, national societies' names are protected in the Geneva Convention. So Chuck is also asking what charter questions we're discussing. I guess I can echo that question. I'm trying to get more clarity on the question for the legal foundation for protections. So that is exactly the point that we're discussing, and that is in line with both the GNSO Council resolution as well as the email in which James summarized how we should go about with our work. So let's please focus on that and ask whether you have more questions understanding how the national society's names are legally protected. There's some mentioning of Article 44 of the Geneva Convention. Maybe a representative from the RCRC can help us understand where the national society's names are mentioned, if at all, for protection, so whether that is in the in Article 52 that I pasted into the chat. So maybe Jennifer or Stefan can help with this.
Thomas, I'm afraid that you will feel that we've already answered that question. No, we, as mentioned, the protections are for the words Red Cross, Red Crescent, Red Crystal. That includes in whatever configuration. So, in terms of, you know, the provision, the specific prohibitions under the First Geneva Convention, that would in any event cover the words Red Cross when they are used as part of the names of the international organization. So in any case, in line with the article that I read, there is no possibility for persons that are not specifically authorized under the First Geneva Convention to actually use those names, register those names, and so on. So that's a very clear prohibition or protection. Now I've given further explanations, and that's also detailed in this long report that we submitted. That, you know, the users include the components of the movement that are authorized to use the names indicatively, And that therefore, you know, the same prohibition should obviously cover the names or the words when they are used as part of the names or identifiers of the respective organizations that are part of the movement. So I'm not quite sure, you know, what further explanation we can give. I'm not going to reread the article that I did. You know, this is hard law, and you know, these again, you know, states have the obligations by virtue of this, and a wide range of them have, you know, acted upon that to adopt domestic legislation. So I'm not sure what further explanation we can possibly give to the first point.
Thanks very much, Stefan. Let me extend this question to Greg. Greg, I think it was you who mentioned that you have not been satisfied with the responses or the information that you got so far. Is there anything specific that you would like to ask for so that we can end this the discussion on this point?
It's Greg Shatton. I don't think we can merely end the discussion on this point. I mean, we can see if everyone else is satisfied that there is a legal basis for this, or that we don't need a legal basis to provide protections for rights if they somehow seem extremely sympathetic or desirable. But I think what we need is a succinct analysis of the specific legal basis. We don't need long surrounding discussions of the good works of the Red Cross or the like. We can assume that, just as we could assume it for Doctors Without Borders or the United Way or any other organizations that do good work and have you know, suffer from fraud on the on and off line. I think we have both some raw pieces of the Geneva Convention being you know, thrown at us, and some very long but not really very clear documentation. There's something in the middle. I agree with Chuck's frustration that we, you know, almost seem to be being buried in verbiage. And so I think we need to get to somewhere where there is specific language being in, get to the point where it is clear that the term designations is embrace these national society names. I didn't see any reference to in whatever configuration in the language, so that's a conclusion that Stefan has advanced. I think we need to show our work on this point in order to answer the question. I think the work has been shown to us. We need to see the work and adopt the work, and then we can decide whether we've what the answer to this question is, yay or nay. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Greg. To be quite honest, having to both Stefan's explanations as well as the explanations Jennifer gave, I could make the connection between the National Society's names and protections. Was that not clear enough? So I'm just trying to understand what exactly we need to ask for.
No, this is Greg Shatton again. First, whatever we have in terms of oral explanations, we need to have in a succinct writing, not buried in a much longer document, if it is, in fact, in that longer document. And so far, you know, I've not heard anything that completely that satisfies me that we have connected the national designations in all of their various forms to the Red Cross protections in the Geneva Convention. I have an open mind and would be as happy as the next guy to have a clear and answer, not a perfect answer, but an answer that can be used to form an adequate basis for all of us. And to answer Jorge, I've read the 44-pager. It's a lot of trees and not enough forest. So that's why I'm saying we need a clear and succinct analysis of the exact question at hand, not a long explanation of or historical document, wonderful though all of this may be. So I'm not saying we have to torture this for months. It's the last thing I want to do. And I'll avoid making any, further analogies since we're lucky to be able to do this in a sense. But I think we do need to make sure that we're all connecting the dots. So I'm not there yet. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Greg. So, as a to-do, we will make sure that we extract the information from the recording pertinent to this from Stefan as well as from Jennifer. Make that, let's say, one pager and distribute it to the list so that everyone has it in writing. Certainly, if Jennifer and or Stefan want to come up with a concise statement with respect to this that can be put on the record, that is also fine. So I think that we have received information on the legal basis. We do know that some are asking for more details in writing to analyze this and form a view on this. So I would suggest that we conclude this first agenda item with this. We will subsequently send something to the list that can hopefully help resolve this issue. Let's now move to the second agenda item. I'm conscious of the fact that we only have 14 minutes left on this call, but at least I want to offer the opportunity to participants of this group to comment on or ask questions surrounding the documentation of the Copenhagen facilitated discussion. Okay, I'm hearing nothing, nor do I see hands raised, so I assume that everything in those documents is clear. There have been documents compiling GAC advice on this very issue, and let me ask you whether there are any questions relating to that. So when it comes to the GAC submissions, while not directly applicable to this group since the GAC issues advice to the board and neither to the GNSO Council nor its working groups, I guess it's worthwhile noting that the GAC has given explanations on the public policy considerations for this. You know, this was not included in all the advice. Sometimes, the advice was more more concise, but actually on one occasion, I'm just going through it, trying to find the exact source. The GAG did offer a public policy consideration when it issued its advice. Maybe Mary or Barry can help me with this if they can instantly spot it. Mary, your hand is raised. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Thomas. Hi, everyone. It's Mary from staff. It's a bit noisy where I am, so I hope it's not distracting. Thomas, if I heard your question, you were asking specifically which piece of GAC advice or where in any specific piece of GAC advice that the GAC would refer to public policy rationale. Is that correct?
That is correct. I guess that some of the advice was more of a general nature, asking for protection of the designations for the Red Cross and also in the same regard for IGO names. But there was one instance on which the GAC has explicitly offered some rationale relating to public policy.
Thank you. And this is Mary again from staff. That is correct. And the most recent, I think the most explicit one you're referring to, Thomas, is the rationale from the Hyderabad communique of November 2016. You see that at the bottom of page one of the document on the screen going into the top of page two. And just echoing here while I have the mic that the GAC's advice on the Red Cross has indeed been mentioning the legal norms and the international law protections that we discussed today. But on the public policy rationale, you find a clear statement in the Hyderabad communique. Thanks, Thomas.
Thanks very much, Mary. Do we have any questions or comments on the GAC's input on this? That doesn't seem to be the case, which I guess allows for us to even end the call ahead of time. As I mentioned, we will provide a summary of the legal rationale offered by the Red Cross. Red Crescent movement for your review. I hope that we will have questions, should there be any relating to this, whether it's satisfactory for you to form a view or not on the list, so that we can then hopefully have a final discussion on this in the next call. I'm virtually looking at Mary and Barry. Have you already booked a slot for a subsequent call? Mary.
Hi, Thomas and everyone. It's Mary from staff again. We have not, as this group, I think, is meeting for only the third time. So we understand that occasionally there are conflicts, but when we scheduled these three calls, they were all for Thursday, which is today at 1300 UTC. So assumption, unless told otherwise, that the next call will also be on this day of the week and at this time. So the only question is whether you want to reconvene next week or in 2 weeks' time, and regardless whether you would like to reconvene for 60 or 90 minutes or some other duration, and we can then schedule it regularly from there.
Okay, thanks very much. I would really like to have an exchange on the three points that were mentioned by James and his email taking place on the list, so that we can do it as few calls as possible. So unless there is objection, I would suggest that we schedule the next call for September the 7th, which is in 3 weeks' time, and hopefully do some asynchronous work on the mailing list in between. And I see that Greg has asked for avoiding the 13 to 14 UTC slot because there is a conflicting CCWG subteam call. And I'm okay with that, so why don't we let the call start at 14 UTC so that we can avoid that overlap. So the next call will be on September the 7th at 14 UTC. If that slot can be confirmed, I think the staff would need to check this. And in the meantime, I think we can now adjourn. Let me give you the opportunity to make some last-minute comments, but I don't see any hands raised.
Thomas, yes. Stefan Henkin speaking.
Stefan.
If there are any further elements or that you require, then it would be helpful for us to be able to be informed and to prepare that.
I think we will see whether there will be more questions from the group.
Yes.
But for the time being, the only to do is basically to give a quick summary of what has been explained today, i.e. establishing the connection between the Geneva Conventions and the National Society's names. Okay, so with that, I'd like to end this call. Thank everyone for their attendance, and talk to you soon and read you on the list. Bye-bye for now.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
Thanks so much, everyone.
Thank you, everybody.
Today's meeting is adjourned. Gino, can you stop the recordings, please? Everyone have a great day.